There she is.
So Chris just said something, but I couldn't hear because she didn't say it in the microphone. Professional podcaster. So I guess we are in for a rant soon. So you're bringing breakfast to the podcast. You have to monitor up, and then you can eat. So welcome to Small Differences, Morning Zoo. Very patient. Should you talk a bit more into the microphone, or should you eat? Eating on podcasts.
It's to be discouraged. I'm a slow eater, so you can take this one.
Thanks. So, yeah, I hadn't prepared a monologue really. I was hoping for the sort of spur of the moment entrance rant thing.
You got one. Is that why the lifts are crap? Just to produce like a decent opening for this podcast.
Yeah, so I guess we have to adjust levels, because firsthand you are too far from the microphone. I thought you had done this a couple times now.
I'm a total rookie at podcasting. This is the meta episode.
Very much. This is the one we haven't prepared.
I don't even have a laptop. This is getting edited to shit when I get on the plane.
No, we're not doing that anymore. No edits. Raw podcasting.
It's good for you, but it doesn't taste very nice.
It's pure. Right, so I love this music. I'll have it running.
Please make it stop.
I guess when we're having our live swearing episode, we will have a live band, and you know what they will play.
I hope every time someone says something, they'll make a rim shot, actually.
Pardon?
You heard me.
But yeah, So I found our theme music by searching on YouTube after elevator music. And I thought we could start this episode by you telling us how you take elevators in Norway.
Someone buzzes you in, and then you come in, and there are two stairwells, one of which is locked.
And two elevators.
And you can call them if you like, and maybe they'll come. And then they just sit there with you in or not. And nothing else happens. There is no further communication from the person who buzzed you in. You just stand there like a lemon.
And when standing there, what do you feel?
I feel like sending a Slack message to the person who buzzed me in saying, hi.
I guess it's somewhat of a test.
I failed.
So what we used to do, but I didn't because I thought you knew, is to tell the person standing on the door, you should take the second elevator.
This would have been useful information. My hotel, right, which doesn't even need me to check, like doesn't even need a person to check me in, provided more comprehensive instructions by text message.
But we are not an hotel. Oh, you need your computer.
Should we record an episode?
We are way into the episode already.
Yeah. I'm revoking your editing rights.
Over my dead body.
This can be arranged.
So Chris has her laptop on her lap, typing, because that's how you make podcasts. Ah, she needs the topic notes, the elaborate topic notes for today's episode.
I don't need topic notes. I thought it would be helpful to consult them so one of us knows what's happening.
I memorized them yesterday, actually.
You are the definitive Boy Scout. Now I have another interaction design problem, which is either that my head is too small or my headphones are too big. We'll continue.
This is not a UX podcast, but how come interaction designers are the most difficult people in the world?
We're not difficult. We like solving problems. We're also very good at identifying problems.
Noted, I'm an interaction designer, but I'm a really bad one because interaction designers, they don't like to solve the problems. They like to point them out. Oh, this button, they placed it here. Oh, really? That's helpful.
This is at least partly true. This is fair.
Am I supposed to use this somehow?
Well, you could like redesign a thing or you could rant about it. Like, which is more satisfying? You tell me.
And everything is an onboarding experience.
We should talk about the show instead of interaction design.
Because this is a show about interaction design, actually.
It
when
is.
You think of it.
It is. It's the entire, say, the entire... Grenzesnet is a much better word, is all I'm going to say.
What is Grenzesnet?
Interface. That was a hard word to come to. Yeah, the entire interface of Norway is like, you know, it's ripe for use. The first use is probably different from subsequent uses. You have different contexts and so on. And there are many calls to action. One of which was to go and drink beer last night.
Yeah, because for our listeners who are sort of into sound editing and so on, you perhaps can hear that we are not talking through a Skype connection.
This is real. We're in the same room. Again, 2 weeks running. This is not, however, I think, a swearing episode.
Well, I thought we should come back to that.
I think so. I think I had the swearing episode during my cold shower.
but because we will have a swearing episode, but it will be live. So we have to arrange that somehow. But yeah, you had a cold shower experience
It was
just a couple of minutes ago, actually.
It was extremely Protestant. It was very good for me, I'm sure.
You invented a new Norwegian word. Good on you. Kjempeprotestantisk. What does that even mean?
I guess extremely Protestant. Doesn't have a... Kjempe doesn't have a direct translation. It's good that you mentioned that word, because I wanted to talk about pronunciation. So, I'm aware that when we talk about words, Norwegian words on the show, very often you'll pronounce it and I'll pronounce it. And I know that there are people who are listening who are going, he said it differently than she said. And these are words that start with the letters KJ.
Have people actually pointed this out?
No, I'm just hyper-conscious of it.
Okay.
And people are like, she's got a tin ear. She can't hear that he's saying ch instead of sh. And this is a regional thing.
It's also an idiosyncratic Knut thing.
Lots of people here say it too, just not as strongly as you.
But generally, don't listen to me for how to pronounce Norwegian stuff. It's super useful that I'm the one doing a cultural exchange program. But
if you're the person who is like least responsible for my learning Norwegian, then we have a problem because you're the person most responsible for my learning Norwegian. However, at least you have the grace to do it via message. It's fine. Most of it's written. I can't hear it. But yeah, you would say champa and I would say champa, probably. I'm surrounded by Oslo people who like to say sure.
Yeah, and I guess you pay back by making me very conscious about my pronunciation. So I used to say chef, but now I say chef.
I'm just going to ignore that. about this syllable ch in English. So I think we have alluded before to German and how if you wanted to say it's possible in German, you would say das ist möglich. And I think it's not unreasonable to say that you maybe struggled a little bit with the last phoneme.
Perhaps.
And I thought, if this is a proper cultural exchange program, I need to teach you how to say her, because her is quite an important sound in Scottish.
Because I'm learning Scottish now.
I'm from Scotland. This is a cultural exchange.
Yeah, sure, I'm ready.
Okay, so loch.
Loch.
That was pretty good. I had a whole technique lined up and everything. I had a whole technique lined up and everything to help you with like the pronunciation, but you nailed it. So why can't you do it in German?
Ich kannst das Lied gemacht. Nein.
Is there a word that means in Norwegian that means Norwegian German mixed? Like denglish would be the Deutsch English.
Ah, that's a difficult compound, I guess, because
Norsk-tysk.
Yeah, it doesn't mix that well. But
Tysk-norsk? Like kebab-norsk?
That sounds more like a dictionary or something. But
I guess.
Yeah, not even Deutsch and Norsk mixes easily.
Doesn't sound good.
Hmm.
Okay, moving on.
Norddeutschlich, perhaps.
Oh, I quite like that.
Yeah.
Norddeutschlich. I don't know whether to use Rille or Skara R.
I feel the energy has sort of gone below zero.
My breakfast is just sunken. I need to talk about Norwegian guy.
You had an opportunity to rant about the hotel showers, but I wanted to ask you what do you mean by kjempeprotestantisk?
So I guess
extremely productive.
More
well behaved.
More the idea that I should, above all, I should remember in life as I go through it not to feel joy.
Joy comes afterwards.
Joy comes for like 5 minutes on a Sunday when the organ has stopped playing.
Or after when you're dead.
Sure.
Yeah.
Ideally the latter. Something to look forward to, I guess.
Yeah, it's around the idea that pain is good for you.
Suffering is good for the soul. My soul is in very good nick this morning then.
Because you had to pay for last night, I guess.
Well, someone's paying for last night.
should we give a thanks? Shout out to our biggest fan. Yeah.
Now I'm just confused.
He's coming. He's coming later.
Okay.
He doesn't make podcasts early in the morning after drinking beer.
Uh-huh. Mm. That fan. Oh, we have so many, it's hard to know who you meant.
Mm. So yeah, You had a dinner and you sat across beside a table with a Norwegian guy.
So after we had an episode of Norwegian guy and trainsplaining and all manner of stuff, I went out to a restaurant and there was a guy, there were a party of three at the next table and I think two men and a woman and the... one of the men did not have Norwegian as his native language, so he could kind of speak it, but they defaulted to English most of the time. And what this meant in reality was one of the men explaining, train-splaining the night train between Oslo and Bergen in a very Norwegian guy accent, which was both adorable and hugely entertaining because we'd just done that episode, basically.
So there is this train that leaves from Oslo and goes to Bergen, and it goes by night, and you can sleep on the train, but it's not a seat, it's a bed, and but you have to pay more, and there's some beer, and it's pretty comfortable, but you have to take the train on the day, because then you can see all the mountains Was it like that?
Very much, okay. But more splainy than that. It was super.
How do you even?
It was just very splainy.
What's being splained? It's just a train.
That he knows, I think, the primary kind of root of that conversation was, let me tell you about a thing I know about and you don't.
So what sort of details, sort of where it...
Where, oh, God, I don't remember.
What type of train?
I don't remember. It was like, it was a week ago. And I was also trying to hold a conversation at my own table.
Rather irresponsible.
I'm very irresponsible.
Yeah. So what should we conclude? That we are tapped into the zeitgeist somehow?
I think so.
Yeah. Or perhaps we are thought leaders. Perhaps we steer the discourse in Norway.
Tids on? Is that the word?
Mm.
Hmm. And another thing.
Okay.
I had a very follow-up-y week.
This Plugs. Is a few podcast episode, I guess.
Plugs. We've talked about plugs. I think Norwegian plugs are really cool. The one that I have on my Mac is fantastic. It's really minimalist.
To specify electrical plugs.
Electrical plugs, yeah. As opposed to... I can't even think what other kind of plugs.
You have those plugs you put in your head? Like
ear plugs?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad you went with that end. Yeah. So, I'm going to need to edit this episode. This is fine. It's very clear. Two pins go in. Plug goes in the socket. However, there are some complications. So to the naive eye, it's not always clear which way up. Like, when you put a British plug in a socket, there's only one way that it can go in. And in addition, it's always oriented the same way.
Because this is the best design ever made by man.
Nah, it's fine. But what it does do is you always know which way up the plug is going to go. So when you're holding the plug in your hand and you put it into the wall, you know which way the plug is going to go. That rule is pretty much never broken. In Norway, who knows, man? Like, you get a double plug socket and one of the plugs goes in one way and the other one goes in at 90 degrees. Or, as is often happening to me, I'm trying to plug a thing into the wall and I'm like, why isn't this going in? And then I realize that some clever person has set the thing up at 45 degrees so that I have to like put my face right in the socket before I can actually work out which way around the plug goes. So I love the plugs, but the sockets are a problem.
I think you found the Schrödinger sockets.
I can't even parse that. It's very early. I'm just going to drink coffee.
Well, I get, do the show. Because the state of where the sort of sockets are placed changes upon how you try to enter the plug.
Schrödinger's binary, though. This is more like a quantum socket.
Yeah.
Or something. All the physicists who are listening to this are just going, no, that's not what it means.
It's the same phenomena with the USB plug, actually.
It is very much like that.
Mm.
Have you heard the joke about how when the guy dies who invented that USB, they're going to lower the coffin into the grave and then raise it up, turn it over, lower it down again, raise it up again, turn it over and lower it for a final time?
It's funny because it's true.
I know. How was your week?
That's always a difficult question. Not because it was difficult, but because I never remember. Yeah, I was at Dugnad on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
A proper dugnad.
What kind of socially responsible things were you doing? Or collective things would be a better word.
Well, I what is grøft in English?
I'm not even sure. I want it to be stuff that collects behind doors. It's kind of like dust, but a bit greasier. Please tell me it's that. What is it actually?
Ah, I dug a trench.
Like a groove.
A groove, yeah.
Was this a latrine trench or where were you?
Well, it was a trench for cabling, but for sound cables, actually.
Really, where were you?
I was in or at the stables.
And the horses really need a good sound system.
Yeah, this podcast is huge among the equine race, I guess.
Equine.
Equine.
I feel sorry for them, like, because I guess the most they can do is kick in the stable door if they don't like the episodes. That seems unethical.
So yeah, well, it was for the PA sound system because they're doing dressage. There, so yeah.
Wow. Okay. Nice. And did you feel a great sense of community and collectivism? Or were you just like, I'm digging a trench?
I guess since no one listens to this besides the horses in the stable, I felt a sense of irritation about the efficiency of the other workers, actually. Because it's lots of hanging around and air quotes,
drinking coffee?
Planning. No, the coffee comes afterwards.
Oh.
So well, people are eager. They want to work, and right? But they're not coordinated. So no one takes responsibility. So it's really ineffective.
This is the problem with collectively organized things. So did it actually need some kind of dictator to just stand at the front and point to people and say, you, dig the trench.
Yeah.
You, put the coffee on.
There was a lack of dictators.
Okay.
So.
Well, welcome to Norway.
Hmm. So this is the, I guess, the backside of egalitarianism.
You know,
I guess.
You can't say that in English.
Yeah.
The well, ass end of egalitarianism.
Pun very much intended.
I guess.
You keep changing the rules.
There are no rules.
But I'm surprised because I just sort of implied something and you just... What on earth did you do at the stables? Who even are at the stables? And here I think we found a small difference because in Great Britain I don't think it's that uncommon to have horses or
right.
do riding or something.
Right, I shared an office for 9 years with a colleague and friend who rides and has horses and you know had to go and deal with them every day.
And the sport is actually not huge, but not uncommon in Norway, but there isn't a culture for it. It's actually somewhat looked down on.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because soccer.
Huh. Well, I guess there's that differentiation in the UK, but if you have horses in the UK, the subtext is that you're maybe a bit posh. Are you a bit posh?
I think so. Well, it's crazy expensive.
Yeah, yeah. The vet bills for horses are staggering. Quite aside from anything else. And I guess they eat as much as a... There's a phrase. Anyway.
it's not the food or the vet. It's more like the accommodation.
I guess that costs...
Yeah.
Do you have your own stables? I wonder about this. Or do you sort of lease them?
Of course, we have our own. No, we haven't. But it's pretty close. Yeah.
Cool.
Don't you want to know what my horse, what his name is?
It's Finn, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's very unpatriotic of you.
Why?
As in, person from Finland.
It's also a website.
Please tell me that's not where you got the horse. Finn.no is it's like Craigslist for Norway. It's everything that you want to buy or exchange or sell or whatever is on there. Real estate agents refer you to Finn.no. Don't bother me in my office/shop. Just go and look on Finn.no, and when you found something you actually want to look at, call me.
I guess it's a fair comparison, but is it really like Craigslist?
It's less hand-knitted. It's a lot more kind of professional-looking. Craigslist Craigslist seems to have people who are like, if anyone wants to be my friend on a Thursday night and come and play Star Trek with me, like live action. Can you just call this number? I'm lonely.
Yeah, I don't think you would found that on Finn.
I haven't looked. I want to stress, I haven't looked.
But Finn is pretty useful. If you, that's sort of a huge life hack in if you live in Norway. Because if you want to get rid of something, anything really, a pile of crumble or some dust or something, you just put it out on Finn for free. Against that person comes and gets it.
Mm.
And there will be one, two person who actually 5 minutes after you publish the ad comes and gets it.
I haven't seen any free stuff, but I'm cheered to know that this happens.
You just go to Torge and Gi Sport.
Mm.
Loads of free stuff.
Wow.
Come and get it.
In the UK, if you want to get rid of like an old washing machine or something like that, it's really hard to get someone to come and take it away. So a strategy that a friend discovered was what you do is if you put it out in the street, no one will touch it. If you put it out in the street with a sign on it that says something like waiting for collection or do not touch or back in 5 minutes or something like that, it will be gone. The implication that it has value, I guess.
And what does this tell us about the British people?
Oh, now here's a new word for me. Let me see if I can remember this. I had a long debate last night about whether the word snusfornufti meant thrifty or not. It seems to have two interpretations. Interested on your hot take here.
First of all, since I'm sort of hearing the word in a new sort of setting now, so it's a compound word of two words, right? Snus, which we have told you about.
Too much.
And fornufti, which means sensible or something.
Yeah.
And this snooze isn't snooze here. It's more on the nose or something. Because snusa, that means to smell. Not to give odor, but the act of smelling. Sniff.
So, right. But... okay.
So kind of your nose in the sky-ish connotation. I don't know. This is just my sort of native interpretation. But yeah.
It kind of boiled down to two interpretations. And one of them would seem to be thrifty, like someone who very deliberately doesn't spend their money and carefully saves it. And then, you know, to the point where they're ready to spend it and then they spend it, but they're sort of prudent, they're thrifty with their money. And prudent would be a good word, I guess. And the other was more sort of earnest and... serious.
But they are wrong.
Who's wrong?
Whomever.
Maybe prudent is the best translation. I couldn't get to that last night.
Because, you should or could expect that a snusfornufti person would be thrifty.
Mm.
But what makes a person snusfornufti is that this person is very sensible or prudent, if you want. Mm. But not only that, but are loud about it.
Oh, ostentatiously, like, oh, look at me saving all my money.
Yeah, ooh. And always gives you, and sort of judgy, so it gives you flack for not being as sensible or whatever as the person.
So slightly disapproving of other people who don't behave in that way.
Mm.
I wonder if there is an English word for this.
Isn't that just English? Will I sort of be turned around and go back on the Hifrana? Did I just...
I'm confused. Ellis Pratt wrote and educated me about English national anthems. So I'm from Scotland. I grew up in Scotland. I didn't live in England until I was like certainly in my early or mid-20s. And so a thing that I managed to completely overlook was Jerusalem. And I've overlooked it to the extent that even now I feel ill-equipped to explain it. It's a hymn-ish.
So you know that is the capital of Israel?
Okay, not
context.
That much. Yeah, context. It's a song. It's like a substitute English national anthem, I guess. It's a thing that you never bloody hear when you grow up in Scotland. So this is like a thing. It's like a shibboleth for people who are English and maybe slightly posh, but maybe only slightly. And in Scotland, it's just like it's not on the radar. Certainly when I was growing up, it just wasn't on the radar at all. So this is a thing that kind of people in England know about and probably know how to sing. And it's just a kind of constant cultural reference point. And I see references to it occasionally and I'm like, I don't really get this.
And the song is Jerusalem?
Yeah. It is not about artichokes, if you wondered. We can put a link in the show notes. I'm sure it's all over YouTube and stuff.
But why?
I think it's a metaphor.
So England is like Jerusalem is for the Israelites?
Something green, something pleasant, I don't know.
Do you even have honey in your rivers or milk or whatever?
Certainly, yes. Huh. I'm part of the soon-to-be ex-European honey mountain or whatever. We're getting a referendum again.
Yeah, I saw that.
When I say we, Scotland, you guys south of the border, you're on your own now. Well, maybe you are. We don't know yet.
So how does that work?
Well, I probably won't get to vote again. They can have it without me. It's fine. I'm not bitter. It's a bit weird. It's like one of those things where, well, we didn't like the outcome, but now the circumstances have changed so much because there was a Scottish referendum on independence and then there was the British leaving the EU referendum and Scotland's vote was very much for staying in the EU. And that has triggered people in Scotland to say, well, the Scottish First Minister to say, okay, we're having another referendum because the conditions are so altered than they were when we took this decision before.
So they may actually never take your freedom.
Have you been waiting for a long time to say that?
Since 3 weeks ago, I guess, but or four, I don't remember even. But yeah.
I guess we'll see. I'll tell you what, if Scotland votes to secede from the rest of the United Kingdom, secede's a very loaded word, isn't it? I guess, remain part of the EU and be separate from England, then I think you should give that speech again.
And I will give it in Gaelic. Gaelic.
In garlic?
Garlic. In garlic.
So let's differentiate here between Scottish Gaelic and Irish Gaelic. I think they say Gaelic and they're slightly different languages.
What is
Gaelic?
Educate me.
It's a lot of vowels and sounds that don't really... I'm very ill-educated, so it's like a tiny, tiny minority language. I guess it occupies a similar status to Sami here with respect to the rest of the UK. Iforhold til, we talked about that last night as well and the abuse thereof. It is a variant of it spoken in Scotland by people mostly in the Highlands and Islands. They're trying to bring it back, like they put labels on the some of the train stations on the West Coast and stuff like that. But I think I don't know whether they're astroturfing it a little bit, so I'm not really sure if it will really take or not. But it was very successful to bring more Welsh back in Wales, so maybe they'll start doing that again.
So could we have Gaelic?
Gaelic.
Gaelic.
Like it had two L's in the middle.
Gaelic.
There you go.
Yeah. So could we have Gaelic guy transplaining in Gaelic?
I know a guy who has a little bit of Gaelic, actually. He is from Cape Breton. Hi, Dave, if you're listening. I hope you are. And Cape Breton's really weird. You want to talk about countries or islands or landmasses split by a language. It sounds like there you drive around the coast of the island and you go through French Gaelic, French Gaelic, French Gaelic, depending on like which bay you're in. Yeah, so he should like record us a thing or come on the show, Dave. I know you're in like, you know, Vancouver, but well, Vancouver Island, but it's not that far.
But do you know any Gaelic?
I think Dimdiol. No, that's Welsh. Damn. What do I know? I can't remember any. No, in a word. It's not a thing that you learn really growing up in.
Homework.
I'm not going to be able to pronounce it. I guess I'll watch some YouTube clips. Yeah, Dimdiolch. I think that's Welsh for no thanks. I'm conflating my anti-nuclear buttons from when I was a kid. Guess what kind of household I grew up in. Last point and follow-up. Cultural appropriation. We've talked about hygge and about its increasing embrace by Britain as a concept that we would like to aspire to. And I saw a bit of reverse cultural appropriation the other day in Oslo, which was that I was minding my own business, sitting drinking a coffee, and across the room I saw a chalkboard, and it said, "Keep calm and have a bite of Norwegian food."
Oh, dear.
Keep calm is now a thing in Norway. You're welcome.
But did we even need that?
Yeah.
Weren't we calm already?
I don't know. Now, this was in a train station. So it may be that people in train stations in Norway are like slightly less calm than other Norwegians. But even so, you're starting from like a pretty calm kind of basis there.
Yeah, I guess this was surprising being in urban Oslo. But I think perhaps that may have been a bit of interior design kitsch.
Rather than a sincere call to Norwegians to keep calm.
Yeah. I think I would pin this in the same category as writing dream or love on the walls.
That seems to be a thing that you guys are really big on.
Especially thanks in for including me in that well, yeah.
Y'all.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah, what is it with, like, if you look at Scandinavian kind of homes on fin.no or elsewhere, lots of kind of love on the wall in English in big letters. Is that just a thing that happened here? Like a few years ago, people just decided that English was cool and they were going to...
Well, we decided that English was cool years ago, but having it on our walls, that's a rather new thing. And here you have a small pointer to perhaps not class distinction, but some distinction in Norway. You have those who put letters on the walls and those who not.
What does it mean? Which way around does that go?
Have a guess. Let's see how appropriated you are.
Well, this is hard because, like, obviously Norway has no class system. So, and everyone is equal. So it's genuinely very difficult to gauge. I mean, the apartments and places that I've looked at that would have had this kind of thing on the wall, they seem quite nice, quite fancy. But I have to make a comparison here, right? The standard to which people clean, decorate, tidy and otherwise present their houses on fin.no or other places in Scandinavia is unbelievably high by British standards. So it's really common when you look at photos of someone's sort of house or apartment on real estate sites in the UK. All their clutter is there. All their shit is there. Like, they've tidied and I guess they've vacuumed the floor and stuff like that. But fundamentally, there is just clutter. And here, it's just like, no, there's nothing. It's just beautiful. It's like magazine ready.
And lime.
Say what?
That's the thing, because you're correct. We even have these decorating services. So when you're about to move and sell your apartment, you get these guys in and they will sort of clean it up and hang up some neutral pictures and stuff like that.
And does everyone get this?
No, not everyone. But it's not that uncommon.
I wonder if it might be more common here than in the UK.
But yeah, I've seen some ads from the UK, and yeah, you're right. You have clutter.
We do.
That's a bit weird, actually, because if you want to sell or rent out an apartment, you want to give the possible buyer sort of, you want to let the person imagine themselves in the said apartment.
Right. You have to provide like a blank canvas that they can project onto, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So white walls and like lots of room for imagination and very little stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know why people don't do that more. It's very jarring when you see a property where they've taken their own photos. It was dark. It was dark outside. So there's flash reflection on the window in the shot and like there's just crap everywhere.
So it would be really easy to sell stuff, to sell estate in Britain if you brought in some Scandinavian finesse.
I guess so. It would probably give you the edge for sure. Like some very nice properties obviously do get kind of cleaned up and they, you know, they look immaculate, but I think the overall standard is very low. That said, there was a period when I was looking at Swedish real estate a lot and quite cheap stuff. And there's this very sharp cliff where the quality drops off. And I don't know if you get much of the same here in Norway, but you go very rapidly in quality from things that are beautiful and empty and the walls are white and so on to things where every single wall is yellow pine that was perhaps last treated in the early 1980s. There are spectacular, in a bad way, tiles in the kitchen and the bathroom, which are very vivid colours of brown, green, red, yellow. And there are stuffed animals everywhere.
The real estate business is actually pretty different in Sweden than in Norway.
In what ways?
In several ways, I guess, but most importantly, I think the urbanization in Sweden has gone way ahead of Norway.
Can you say a bit more about what you mean by that?
Because if you are looking for a house or something outside the city areas in Sweden, first of all, you will get it crazy cheaply.
Yes, I did notice this.
But the standard isn't that high. So you will get these really cozy areas, right, or houses. So actually, there are, I think it's, I'm so bad with what's common or normal or, I think many Norwegians has bought sort of holiday houses in the Swedish land side.
Because they were so cheap.
Yeah. If you compare the standard to Norway, it's really different because if you generally will get a pretty new and large house with bubble baths and stuff like that in the Norwegian land countryside for not that much compared to cities.
Yeah.
So if you can get a small apartment in the middle of Oslo for 5 million or something.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
And if you go out a couple of hours of Oslo and want to spend 5 million, you will get a pretty large house. Yeah. With two bathrooms and so on and so on.
Yeah.
A mansion.
I think you have to go quite far from Oslo before that really drops off.
Because yeah, I guess.
People like want a kind of holiday home that they can drive to in an hour or two. Like Stockholm is the same, I understand. Like there's quite a wide radius. But when you go further north or when you go kind of further into the countryside, then yeah, I guess it gets kind of cheaper. I mean, the same, I guess, happens in the UK, maybe. I'm not very well acquainted with rural property in the UK.
I guess people have to tune in for the real estate podcast.
I think this is what that has turned into.
So I think this is the follow-up episode, the filler episode.
We keep doing this.
The main plot has to wait. I started watching Buffy again.
From the start?
Yeah.
They're all like 12 or something.
Yeah.
It's cute.
But yeah.
What are you getting from it that you didn't get first time around? Actually, why are you watching it again?
I think I read this piece in The Guardian, actually, about how Buffy is the best TV show.
It was 20 years old.
Yeah. Oh. But
yes, that's exactly the noise. Oh.
But yeah, I remember it when it came to Norway. And it was pretty popular amongst the girls for some reason.
Just the girls. It's a very feminist show.
Yeah, but not just the girls, but they were loud about it, right?
Hmm.
So I guess it was Buffy and I guess Friends, but that was a couple of years before that.
Yeah. Friends was like the whole 90s, right?
That's not feminist at all.
Not really.
But yeah.
I have several notes about property, but we seem to have taken a turn. So we can talk about TV again if you like.
We can return to property.
Yeah. What else happened this week?
You just asked that because you want me to talk whilst you scroll.
Don't judge me. Podcasting is hard. I'm looking at a note that says correction fatigue, and I don't think I wrote that. So
I did.
What's the deal?
Because we do this thing in Slack. We do it because you asked for it. I'm not sure I asked for it, but I see it's helpful. But
this is your fatigue we're talking about. I'm so sorry. You are the world's most patient person.
Not really.
Apart from Tormod, who just walked in, who's so patient, we named a word after him.
But, because you are in this learning process, and you ask, please correct me, please say something when I'm doing it wrong, and so
when
on.
When I'm Norwegianing right? Wrong, which I do all the time.
And correction fatigue goes both ways, I guess, because I guess when you first started, people generally were pretty eager, or not eager perhaps, but I saw more people sort of spell checking you.
Mm. It didn't happen very much. Like, you were really the only person who stuck with it.
Yeah.
Which, thank you. But because, you and Anya.
Because this is completely understandable, because it sort of dabs, people are used to it or something. So people, I guess, there's something here. I struggle to sort of catch it, but it's sort of tiresome also to keep correcting a person, right?
Well, I was going to say, thank you for sticking with it this long, but you can stop if you want.
No, it's not about that, but it's an interesting dynamic, sort of, because it feels like critique.
It's not taken as such at all. I'm really grateful for it.
You say that, but I'm suspicious, because
how else am I going to learn?
Yeah, because you can rationalize around it. Of course, you need constructive feedback, or you need to sort of have helpful feedback. But also, you are reminded that you did something not right.
But that's short feedback loops are the most effective feedback loops. It's the fastest way to improve.
You're very snusfnufti now.
It's sincere.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. But isn't there a sort of emotional level to this, which is about mastering something? Or because we have the inclination to want to get it right. We want to succeed, right?
Right.
And when you are reminded that you didn't, yeah, you can take that as a learning experience and all that. But isn't there always an emotional component that is, damn it? Because you keeping have these expressions when you forget a word or something, you keep knocking your head on the table. So there That's are frustrations.
Somewhat
there, right?
For comedy value. But also because it's frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, in a word. Or yes and. It's frustrating when I can't remember a word, particularly if it's a word that I know that I know, and then just, yeah. you know, like I'm tired and they just won't come. The correction thing is really helpful. Like, the broader context of that is that certainly for the last few years, I have embraced doing things that were difficult and not welcoming failure, but kind of just going, right, okay, what can I learn from this? And I don't take grammar correction or spelling correction or whatever as critique, because it is like a drop in the ocean compared to how helpful it is. And I guess the last few years, primarily one of the things that I spent doing, which wasn't interaction design, was falling on my face and learning to live with that. So it doesn't feel like a personal thing, and it doesn't feel like a kind of criticism. It's more like, oh, wow, learning opportunity.
Yeah, but you had to learn that, right?
Yeah. Like, to start with, you're like, oh, God. And not in Norwegian specifically, although a little bit, but really, like, when you start accepting criticism as a learning experience, then initially it's everything is like a death blow to your ego.
Yeah, right. Because I thought I was good with that. Having been at university, having had a German supervisor, I thought I was good with sort of
taking criticism.
Yeah.
But
I noticed that when you are correcting my English, which is appreciated, which is taken as a learning opportunity, it's still somewhat...
It rankles.
Tickles my ego.
Tickles sounds nice. Tickling your ego sounds like a kind of a pleasant thing. Well, it depends if you like being tickled, I guess. But
exactly. So there's sort of, I'm not sure about the feeling.
Okay.
Which isn't meant as a critique or stop doing that or something. It's just interesting. Because I recognize that it's not perhaps rational.
And is it a kind of reflexive, how dare you, ego thing? Or is it more like, oh, damn, I got something wrong, kind of a...
More the latter.
I think unless you had to speak English all day, every day, it would be hard to be doing it right all the time.
But in Norway, we have learned that we are really good in English, even better than most Britons, actually, because they don't have as many English words as we. And this, I'm joking, but not really.
Good at English.
I think in Norwegian English education or there you have it. I forgot the word, but during class, right, English class. So the teachers often say that, you know, that we are really good at English, even better than some English pupils, right? It's not like the native English speakers know their language well, right?
So there's a lot of kind of self-congratulation going on.
Yeah.
Even when you're in school, look at us, aren't we good at English? Yeah, well, then you're going to fall on your face occasionally, I guess, as a consequence of that. That seems like building you up for a fall to some extent. Yeah, by contrast, I can pretty much assure you that there are no French or German or Spanish language teachers in the UK going, yes, of course, all of you pupils are speaking English, speaking German much, much better than native Germans. There's more kind of despair and rolling of eyes. Yeah.
Because I think this comes from the... sort of little brother complex that somewhat is present in Norway.
To recap, what do you mean by that?
Well, as I mentioned before, we like to be acknowledged by all other countries, right? Or from abroad. And the thing about us being good at English is also somewhat in that place.
Look at us.
I was occupied by the crane outside. So I sort of tuned out.
It's a construction site just across the street from here. Yeah. It's kind of interesting to watch. I think, like, it's one thing to tune out when the other person is talking. It's another thing to do it while you're talking. How boring are you, Norway?
This is my cultural pick of the week, actually.
Which?
I have invited it out, if that's the word, it's not, but...
White.
To white?
To white something out. It's not. You're not going to find that in the dictionary, but yeah.
So my culture...
Okay, what is your cultural pick of the week?
Staring at the wall.
Is this a Norwegian, yet another Norwegian national sport that I'm not yet familiar with?
Not yet, but I picked to be bored.
Say more. Are you bored? We can stop this podcast. I'm sorry, am I boring you?
No, because in the cultural pick of the week section, we keep promoting music, literature, TV shows, consume, right? But actually, it's good to be bored sometimes, to sort of tap out, to give your head some space.
Right.
And if you're going to do that, Norway would be a good place for it.
Well, there's a lot of space.
It's a lot of space. It's a lot of white walls. and yeah.
Are you saying it's the visual equivalent of waiting a long time in a conversation and then saying,
Seriously, not really, but for comedy, yeah.
Well, what was it that made you write this down then? Like what?
Because it's a thing I've been more conscious about for the last weeks, I guess. It's important to be bored because I'm the worst. I keep filling space with podcasts and scrolling on my phone and stuff like that. That sort of steals your attention, and it sort of, you don't get the time to think about things very deeply.
Right.
And this is not the mindfulness podcast, but it's somewhat in that area, I guess.
Hmm. It's very good to just be with your thoughts, and it's very easy to not just be with your thoughts because there's all this technology and stuff happening all the time. I did that a little bit yesterday. I went for a walk around Nordness here, which was very nice. It was sunny. There were crocuses. And I could have listened to a podcast, but I listened to music, which is sort of a bit of a cheat, but it was really just a kind of a canvas for like just walking around and experiencing Bergen. And that was super good. There should be more of that, more white walls. Do you think people in Norway are actually better at spending time with kind of white walls and the metaphorical equivalent thereof? Not like literally living with white walls in the house, but kind of giving more space for thinking.
We are getting worse at it, I guess.
Why? Why do you
say
that?
Those damned smartphones,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And all those Americans making really good television.
Yeah.
Yeah, well. Damn you guys. HBO binging, especially.
Binging, right? So I guess since many Norwegians are good with going outside and hiking and so on, in that sense, yeah. Because going for a hike in the woods or at the mountains is sort of staring at the blank canvas. This is really...
Sorry, I'm trying to do something with my mic. It's not working that well.
Professional podcaster.
I think the value, the average value that people seem to attribute to... No, that's not the right phrase. I think people in Norway or the people that I know here seem to spend more time outdoors. And that's a very good space for reflecting, and particularly if you're out to like walk or cross-country ski or something like that, kind of makes you think about things in ways that you wouldn't if you were just sitting indoors or on the sofa with your smartphone or whatever. I think I notice people enjoying the outdoors here, but what I don't know is whether that's what they're getting from it. I hope so.
I guess we have to send out a survey.
Oh, I love surveys, man.
Survey or survey? Survey.
Survey.
Yeah. I stand corrected.
You took that one very well.
Like a saint. So, yeah, your cultural pick of the week seems interesting.
This is a thing that I got from my husband, but I think he got it from Jason Cockey. And this is a video of three guys in the north of Norway skateboarding on a beach. And they can do this because the beach has frozen. It's all cold. And so the sand, which was wet, has frozen and become like concrete. And it's really great. It's just three Norwegian guys just basically having a laugh on a beach in Norway. And it seems like it's kind of, it's like it's in the middle of winter there, because at one point in the video, they're like, is this daytime now? Because like the sun is really low, the light is quite low. And yeah, I guess it's daytime. Huh, cool. And then they kind of get on with it. And it's just a really, it was just a kind of really nice insight. Like, I guess they're not from there. Otherwise they wouldn't have commented on the light. I didn't notice very much about the accents because I was focusing on the skateboarding, but it's just really kind of nice example of people enjoying the outdoors just in an unusual way, perhaps.
Cool.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll watch it afterward.
Tell me about your word of the week.
Yeah. So I had this beef this week in newspapers.
Right. You're many, many times like published kind of columnist, I guess, in sort of newspapers and stuff here.
Rather.
Tell us about your beef.
So, of course, we have this. Norway also have a startup scene, and there's talk about innovation and transformation and a trigger warning, disruption.
Right.
So all this kind of douchey startup Silicon Valley stuff.
Right. So all the same kind of buzzwords and crap. Yeah.
There have been this discussion spawning from another column last week, I think, in sort of the financial newspaper. I don't know what the British equivalent would be.
We have the Financial Times.
Yeah, sort of like that.
Yeah.
And which criticized, I guess, this Singularity University thing. SU.org.
Remind me what that is. I've heard of it before, but I can't.
It's where rich people go to play Innovation House, I guess.
Without like the need for actually earning any money or...
or actually make
something.
Or having
something. A business model or...
yeah, something like right. that. But yeah. I read the piece and I looked at the Singularity University website, and me being a comparative religion scholar, actually, it immediately reminded me about the stuff I've seen in the New Age area, somewhat.
In what way? Ways?
Because singularity, to talk about singularity, that's from post-humanism, right? Huxley and all that stuff.
I don't know. The only time I ever come up against the word singularity, it's to talk about like the point of inflection when computers become smarter than us, which I think is a whole other rant.
Yeah. but in that sort of the belief that technology will make us not invincible, but our consciousness will be sort of embedded in technology and we will live forever and it will radically transform the whole of the world. And
footnote Elon Musk.
Age of Aquarius and all that. It's sort of intermingled. There's a Venn diagram which overlaps.
Venn.
But... not taken graciously at all, but...
I'm sorry, you had a point.
But yeah, so I wrote this thing about how this innovation talk, some of it, is comparable to New Age talk. Without a value judgment, really, but...
Really?
Well, I surf on the value judgment, but... I've studied these things, and when you do that, you have to put your judgments in parentheses, epoché, as it's called. But my critique really was the use of concepts and ideas and words without filling them with meaning, and talking about digital transformation and innovation. Like it's obvious,
right?
Which it's perhaps it is, but sort of more pointers to an identity or...
So these are like used as kind of badges of kind of look at me. Hey, I'm going to do digital transformation without actually having any substance behind it.
I'm an innovator.
Right. I'm a disruptor.
Yeah.
I'm a change agent. I'm a chaos agent.
Ugh. So, yeah.
Oh, the physical uncomfortableness that you were exhibiting right now is amazing. I wish I could bottle that and sell it.
That's an innovative idea.
Okay. I'm working on a business model now. I'll have the website up by lunchtime.
Yeah. Every product starts with a website. So, yeah. So to roll back. So this critical column got an answer by this person that said we shouldn't criticize these people. We should celebrate them. We need big thinkers. We need Steve Jobses and Elon Muskes and so on.
Musk guy.
What if people had harassed the Wright brothers? And they did. And look at them. Now we are flying, right? So let's not sort of critique them.
Take it easy on the dreamers.
Yeah. And I didn't agree with that.
Did you write another thing?
So I wrote a thing about, comparing sort of the talk with the new age stuff, like promising transformation and sort of assuming that the progress of technology is inherently good or unavoidable. Or deterministic, somewhat. It feels like that. Oh, machine learning is coming.
Right.
We have to adapt.
Right.
But who's doing the machine learning? Well, we are. So,
yeah. There's a lot of hot air and not always anything substantial.
Yeah, and get ready for disruption.
Mm.
And I guess it's somewhat true. Well, there are stuff that will be automated and so on. And perhaps in a couple of years, we don't need truck drivers anymore. But still, should the conversation be about, hooray, people are making Uber for trucks? Or should it be about something else? And I believe that it perhaps should be about something else.
What kinds of things?
If we are to automate truck driving or whatever, what then? What about the people?
Right. Where's the human angle here?
Yeah. Is this something we should spend our energy on? Does this make the world a better place? Is it sustainable? Perhaps it is. So, but that kind of talk. Mm. And what does it really entail to do that? How far are we actually? Is it just to add some AI and machine learning and there we are, or is it more difficult than that? What are the kind of problems we have to solve to reach that goal and so on? And I guess people are talking about that, but that doesn't breach the sort of surface of the shared discourse.
Well, it's much easier to write a blog post or something about how something, something, machine learning, something, something, technology, something, something, disruption, right? And very hard to deliver a thing that creates some kind of measurable benefit for people generally, or like a specific group of people. Yeah. I know why you went on the rant.
And what was the word of the week?
What was the word of the week?
Well, it's a word that is borrowed by the Supreme English Language.
From the Supreme English Language.
Yeah. I stand corrected.
I'm just this to cheese you at this point.
We should have a correction bell or something.
Ding!
Yeah.
Or maybe more like...
Disrupta as a verb.
You want me to say verb?
Herb.
As a herb?
Well, so I will try to use it in a Norwegian sentence. Vi må disrupte mer.
We must disrupt more.
Yeah. And this is kind of shit people who are innovators, or not people who are innovators, but people that claims that someone are innovators and we should celebrate them.
Who want to look like innovators. Say,
yeah.
Do you think this is different from the UK or for that matter the US? So like the West Coast of the US is in the last couple of decades been very kind of blah, blah, disrupt, blah, blah. Mm. But London particularly as a tech hub is very, very similar. There's lots of people talking about disruption and we got to like transform digitally and stuff. There's a lot of really good work going on. Is that happening here too? The really good work that is actual real disruption, real digital transformation?
I haven't seen it really. Actually, well,
what do we do all day?
So delivering food to your door, is that disruptive because grocery stores are losing business?
It's disruptive if I'm in the middle of watching TV and like the doorbell rings.
Yeah, exactly. So what does disruption or disruptive means?
Right.
And is it necessarily a good thing?
There's a whole conversation here, I guess, about how like there is a lot of Norwegian industry that really does need something. Like the oil industry, for example, is not long-term sustainable, right? So something needs to give. The energy companies in Norway need to transform. And there's like a whole thing there that is a genuine need and a human need at the largest scale, but also like kind of how are people in Norway going to make a living in the future sort of level.
Yeah, and there's a subtle difference between disruption and transformation, I guess.
Right.
And the idea that if you want to do business, if you want to succeed, you have to disrupt something is weird because you could also just do a thing better.
Right. Right.
Or, yeah.
I feel like sometimes disruption is like disruption for disruption's sake, like, and for no, just because you can. So, yeah.
And I haven't really formulated how, but there's something about this language or these words that it's almost like the kitsch writing on the wall. It feels, yeah.
Say more?
No. That's my point. I can't really say more
just
at the
kind
moment.
Of, it does what my friend Queasy. Simon would call cheeses your pisser.
Yeah.
Even though that's not a phrase in English. It's a great phrase that he coined, and I think we should make it a thing. Okay. Yeah.
I have a meeting in 10 minutes right behind you at Kospre. So I guess you have to do your word of the week.
I have to do my word of the week and wrap up. My word of the week is your. Which is a complicated word.
And also a name.
Indeed, yes. You could be called Yor. Which now makes me wonder about people called Yor and what kind of childhood they have. So Yor is superficially yes, but it's in Norwegian and Swedish. It's a word that also means yes, but actually... kind of, it's really
sometimes
sometimes and sometimes it just means yes and
or yes ish
yeah, and sometimes it means indeed or actually, and it's really hard to get your teeth into, but it also sounds really street because you can have someone say disherio and what they mean is that does happen, but that does happen. But it sounds like, yeah, that happens, yo.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of these words that if you look it up in the dictionary, it's got really many entries.
Yeah, it doesn't translate neatly to English, but I love it. I love that it happens. I get confused occasionally because sometimes people, certainly in the Oslo office, say jo, when actually they just mean yes. And like ja as a syllable is kind of approaching jo. So I say it a lot and I don't mean it like yes but or yes and or indeed. I just mean yes. And I'm only doing it because everyone around me is doing it. I'm very confused.
Jo. It's very much in how you say it also.
Mm.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
Jo og.
Yes, and.
So, foreshadowing. I wanted to have the swearing teaser, but I guess we'll settle with swearing teaser.
We don't fucking have time.
No. No, for helvete. That was a very weird place swearing.
Fan us.
But I want to foreshadow next episode.
What's happening in the next episode?
I guess
episode?
We are back in Skype.
I don't know.
Time will show, but I guess some are tuning in for some cultural insights, and we gave something during this episode, but
I think so.
Should we have a proper topic next time?
I think we should have a proper topic. What are you thinking?
What would be helpful for you?
Is this a trick question?
Not really.
Everything is helpful for me. I will always take more information about the Norwegian language. Not in the sense that my Norwegian teacher did the other day, which is let me read my handout to you about the history of Nynorsk and Ivar Aasen, I guess, that you could like reasonably go and read on your own. I mean, like, genuinely, what is happening with Norwegian language? We could do another nerd episode, is what I'm saying.
Let's do that. So my homework is to actually prepare something.
Okay.
From whatever topic you put in the top of the document. But and you, I just remember your homework.
Which I probably haven't done.
Yeah, it's to watch Frozen. And this is fun homework.
Maybe. I don't know if I have access to it in any medium. I doubt it's on Netflix, for example.
Well, we'll fix that in post. But, yeah.
Okay.
So next time, Frozen and nerdery about the Norwegian language.
Okay, you got it.
Ha det bra. Takk for at du hørte på.
Ha det bra.